Welcome to the conference. Please note today's call is being recorded. And at this time, I'd like to turn the call over to Lauren Ritchie. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to now the fourth Renal Endorsement Maintenance Steering Committee follow-up call. Today, we're going to review a couple of the anemia and cardiovascular measures. These measures were discussed and reviewed at the in-person meeting back in August. However, we do have a few outstanding issues that we will address with the work group members today. Before I take a brief roll call of the work group and committee members on the call, Christine, Chandra, are you on the call?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have any opening remarks you'd like to address?
I'd just like to welcome everybody to this conference call, we all have the agenda that we'll be reviewing the anemia and cardiovascular measures and trying to work through some of some of the issues with those. So I'll turn it back over to you, Lauren.
Okay, thanks, Christine. And just really briefly, I just want to address those steering committee members that are on the call today. Just looking at the attendance, I see that we have Ellen Kleiger.
Yes.
Kathy LeBeau.
Yes.
Christine Schonder. Lorianne Dalrymple.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Michael Summers.
Yes.
And Myra Kleinpeter.
Yes.
And are there any other steering committee members that I have not named?
Yes, Rick
Jack
Castell.
Here.
I'm sorry, that was Rick Castell, and who else?
Jeff Burns.
Okay. Anyone else that I missed? Okay, so we don't have as many measures to get through today as we have on the last few calls. The first agenda item is a review of the hemoglobin measure 1667, pediatric ESRD patients receiving dialysis hemoglobin less than 10. And with that, Karen is going to give us just a kind of background on the measure and where things are, and just wanted to review the status of this measure with the committee to get more of a consensus.
Right. And this is Karen. Thank you all for joining the call today. Before I do that, I just wanted to make one announcement, and that is is primarily related to the measures that this work group reviewed. We did receive a letter from the Renal Physicians Association, American Society of Pediatric Nephrology, and the Physician Consortium for Performance Improvement requesting reconsideration of several measures that the committee had not evaluated as meeting the criteria. We just received this on Friday, and which was after we had this call already planned. We have not yet had a time to discuss this with the co-chairs. So I just wanted to let the group know that we had received this letter. We'll be sharing it with the full steering committee, but we need to have a discussion internally about process. We'll let you know that there's more coming on that, and we'll figure out a way, the best way to handle that. So the reason we wanted to have just a brief discussion with this group on the hemoglobin measures was, if you recall, at the in-person meeting, the steering committee evaluated the adult measure of hemoglobin less than 10 of not passing the evidence criterion, but ultimately did evaluate the pediatric measure of hemoglobin less than 10 as passing the evidence criterion and ultimately all the criteria so that it could be recommended for endorsement. And we wanted to make sure that we had the rationale correct in terms of that perhaps on the surface seeming inconsistency. And after that in-person meeting, we had had a smaller call with Rick Caskill and Mike Summers, and I think Christine Schonder was on that call. And I'll just summarize the bottom line from that discussion, and also, I guess, probably from the steering committee meeting, was that the value or the issues for pediatric patients with hemoglobin less than 10 are considerable, and in the absence of harm data with ESA use that specifically included pediatric patients, they thought that the benefits outweighed potential harm to the pediatric patients. Just a little bit of context, if you recall, there was a lot of discussion at the committee meeting about the hemoglobin less than 10 in light of the recent FDA information that came out, again, about hemoglobin values and potential harm with use of ESAs, which is one of the factors in not recommending the adult measure. So I'll stop there and ask if Rick or Michael Summers want to make a few comments, and then we'd like to hear from the rest of the steering committee.
Right. Well, I can go first if Mike wants to add something.
And just one other thing. Would you all, we often forget to do this, but on the conference call, would you identify yourself when you make a comment? It just helps for people when we just hear the voices. Thank you.
Right. So I'm Rick Caskill from Children's Hospital at Montefiore, and I've been on the committee now for since last a year ago summer. So we presented this measure, and we presented our rationale for this based on the fact that there's very little data in the pediatric literature in terms of identifying the gap, and that we wanted to bring as much to the table as we could. We showed some recent data that was not initially reviewed prior to August with two new papers that did show data regarding quality of life and cardiovascular risk factors regarding and hospitalizations regarding pediatric patients on dialysis with hemoglobins below 10. We also had the most recent pediatric dialysis data that we could get from the ELAB project, which was given to us nicely at that meeting, which shows about 20% of patients over that course of 2010 for the project period had hemoglobins less than 10. And we also had recent data from the chronic kidney disease in children study showing that almost 40% of patients entering in to this study, level 2 through 4 CKD, level 2 through 3 CKD, were anemic. So a lot of data from our population in only two or three publications indicating that potential risk for children who have hemoglobins less than 10. Michael, did we cover that, everything there?
This is Michael Summers. Yes, I think Rick summarized it nicely. I think the key points are that the literature is very much different in children than adults, in that we have this target of 10 that shows below 10 there's significantly increased morbidity along a whole set of clinical parameters, whereas we do not have the same data that exists in adults, that there are disadvantages to being greater than 10. And in fact, there's no pediatric data that suggests that there's detriments even as the hemoglobins continue to go higher. We at the meeting, as Rick said, you know, one of the big points was that we didn't have data for a performance gap, but I think the ELAB data that he just alluded to and that Lauren sent around as an email about half an hour ago on page, I think it's page
28 and 29.
Or has the data that shows 20% of patients are not meeting the goal of 10. So I think that shows that there's a performance gap as well.
Okay, so I think the main question, we just want to make sure that the steering committee feels that there are differences that justify moving forward a pediatric measure but not the adult measure. And basically on the rationale that Rick and Michael were just mentioning. So we'll stop there and ask if the other steering committee members have any questions or comments about that.
This is Christine. I think I'll just kind of echo what Michael and Rick were saying, is that the pediatric data is very different from the adult data, and the fact that there are some, there is evidence in the pediatric population of harm with a hemoglobin less than 10. In the adult population, we don't have that same evidence of harm per se until the hemoglobins drop much, much lower. There is the quality of life information in the adults, but that, there's not evidence of true harm in the adults, and so that makes a difference when you're looking at the two different populations for measures development.
Again, I make a case that, you know, if we're going to move ahead with limited data in pediatrics regarding this issue as well as some of the other measures, we have to have a start. We have to have a go-ahead. We have to accumulate the data to build the database like anything else. And if we don't get that opportunity, then we'll come up to the plate again less prepared.
Yeah, well, this is Alan. I think that the data as was presented and we discussed last time for harm for hemoglobins less than 10 in children satisfies the criteria that we discussed and justifies the decision we came to. In adults, there are data for harm at hemoglobins between 6 and 8 and 8 and 10. If you look at strength, vitality, and fatigue, which are patient-derived outcomes that are very important to patients. So I wouldn't discount those as saying they're not really harm. They are harm. But no data that I'm aware of using 10 as a cutoff. And indeed, that quality of life data shows that at levels of hemoglobin about 10, there's really little evidence that, or no evidence I'm aware of, that giving, that changing or taking steps to increase hemoglobin result in improvement in those outcomes. At much lower hemoglobins, there is evidence that that's the case. So I think we made the right decision to recognize the data for children and recognize the absence of data for adults for this measure.
Okay. Any other comments? We just wanted to make sure that we had the right rationale that we could present when these go out for comments. So appreciate you taking a look at this again. Okay. Given that, moving forward in terms of harmonization related to the anemia measures, we really would have these two, the less than 10 for pediatric and the greater than 12 for the for anyone on ESAs. I need to double check. Maybe that's only adults. 1666. Oh, yeah, 1666 is adult. So, and these are both by the same measurement group. Lauren provided a side-by-side of the specifications. So I guess the question is whether the steering committee or the work group members and the other committee members on the phone see any harmonization issues that we should bring up to the measure developer. Obviously, the numerator is different, and the denominator is somewhat different as well, because one's pediatric and then the other one is adult patients on ESAs. But any issues that we should bring back to the developers?
Help me understand what your question is.
Do
have different definitions, as you just described.
Right.
So, What beyond that? What harmonization beyond that? Are you asking about?
I think you're right. I don't think we have any harmonization issues. I just wanted to ask the group, so I will. I think we don't really need to go any further with that. Okay. So the next issue that we had was on measure 626, and this measure was not passed at the steering committee meeting. The developer had asked if they could submit some additional evidence, and we wanted to just see if you had any thoughts about whether this measure should have any further consideration. So, Lauren, do you want to say any more about that?
Just in a subsequent conversation with the measure developer, they wanted to provide the committee with providing some additional information on their summary of evidence of high impact, as well as performance gap, as well as some additional testing data. So we did give them an opportunity to do so. And I don't know if you had a chance to go through the measure submission in detail, but I'll just quickly highlight where the additional information was submitted. And that's first under 1A3. The developer provides some additional information on the prevalence of diabetes and the relation with hypertension and CVD, and additional information on the pediatric data as well. So I think maybe what we should do is perhaps look at evidence of high impact and performance gap for the new information that they submitted, and just kind of go from there, and we will review the measure as though we would in person.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe we should, well, why don't you go ahead, Lauren?
Sure. So I'm just going to pull this up briefly here. So I'd like to ask the work group, is there any information here that would sway your opinion from what was discussed at the in-person meeting?
And maybe we should review what the issues were or at the in-person meeting. In your memo for this conference call, I think we put a summary from the in-person meeting in there.
Right. And basically, this measure did not pass on.
What page is
that?
Okay, so it was page 12 of your memo for this conference call. Page 12. Okay. So, Lauren, you want to
say
what the...
Under the importance, the rationale there was that lipids are a national health priority. No performance data on this previously endorsed measure, even though indicated measures in use. The performance gap data is for all adults, but measure also includes children and a lot of heterogeneity in the measure, kids and adults on off dialysis, and pre-existing cardiovascular disease, includes primary and secondary prevention, and the evidence varies. So basically, the performance gap data did not, the committee felt that it did not meet the NQF criteria for that. And additionally, what measure developers submitted, really...
So let's just ask the steering committee. I know you didn't have a lot of time to look at this, but is there any questions or comments that you have about the additional information that the measure developer thought you should see.
Ms. Allen, I mean, the developer did provide evidence of a performance gap in adults. Unless I'm misreading the additional information, I didn't see children in the additional information. Did I miss that?
Yeah, he talks about pediatric dialysis data, I think.
So yes, it's actually on the screen now. So approximately 29 to 87% of pediatric peritoneal dialysis patients have elevated cholesterol levels with LDL greater than 100. And then some additional 72 to 84% of pediatric kidney transplant patients had LDLs greater than 100.
But that's impact, right?
Yeah.
Did they provide any data on this measure? Because this was a measure maintenance. What did they put under 1B?
I don't think there's anything in there about pediatric.
Right, not in terms of the levels, but in terms
right.
of the measurement.
Right.
So what they provided in 1B2, I don't know that this is any different, was, again, population data from their data, but it was at the aggregate level of 84% were found to be compliant for lipid panel monitoring in people with chronic kidney disease across the patient population, across all providers.
And it was all adults.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah, so I just go back again to what I think we said when we talked about this, which is that either the measure has to be adopted to deal with the data we have, so call it adults, or provide the data on performance gap in this measure for the children.
Right. And the other thing is we still don't have, even for the adults, this is being put forward as a measure for clinician level, let's see, process, clinician or physician level performance, and we just have one large 84% out of all the data. So it's hard to know, you know, what the distribution or the physician level performance is. So is the developer on the line?
Do we have someone from IMS Health? I'm sorry, from Active Health Management? Sorry.
Okay. And they also provided additional evidence, right?
Yes. So in section 4, they provided some additional information there. Reference the SHARP trial, and that this lipid profile monitoring, while supported by the American Academy of Pediatrics.
Okay. All right. So any other questions or comments from the steering committee?
Hi, Karen. This is Lori Dowerpool. So just to clarify, the new paragraph from our data out of a population of over 13 million, 96,000 fulfilled the denominator. So we're assuming that does include the adolescents and adults. We just don't know the new under 1B2 added.
Yeah, it doesn't. Let's see. And what do they say about the data? Right. It says out of their
who fulfilled their defined denominator, so we're presuming that's a mixture of adolescents and adults.
Right, right. That's what I would assume as well.
This is specific to the population that we've defined in this group, that million? I doubt it, right? there aren't a million people on dialysis.
No, 90,000 fulfilled their denominator. I think they're saying they have a million, that they have data access, 90,000 of whom meet their denominator criterion.
Sure.
And it's chronic kidney disease, not just dialysis.
Right. And the
right, sorry. Sorry, that's right. So this is 13 million in your denominator of CKD3 or higher, is that correct?
96,000 is the denominator.
So I think, as Lorian's saying, what they are saying that they have 13 million patient records in their database, and of those, 96,000 met the denominator, which their denominator is defined as males greater than 10 and females greater than 13 diagnosed with chronic kidney disease.
And I'll just ask again, is someone from Active Health on the call, Dr. Veer? Okay. Or if you can't get into the speaker line, you can just send me a message on the chat box.
Operator, how would the person signal to you that they're on the participant line?
Someone's on the participant line right now, and they need the line open. Hit *0. Also, please make sure your phone is not on mute.
Okay.
All right. So, if we had that clarified, does that? I think the other issue with the measure was under evidence. This is the same, in terms of the evidence, it would not be direct because this is about assessing, which is not real proximal to the desired outcomes. And there were questions about does lipid monitor, obviously, that in itself does not affect outcomes. Observational study links CKD to hyperlipidemia. And some small volume studies that statins reduce microinflammation. So they were submitting some additional evidence information. If you look at what items did they change when
C4, and then also under their test results, but it's the same information.
Okay. All right. So does the committee feel they need to have more time to take a look at this? Or does anyone have a suggestion of how to proceed with this particular measure, if there's any interest in reconsidering it by the steering committee, or should we kind of poll you after the call to get the sense of the members on the call?
Erin, this is Lorian again.
Yeah.
I only had time to briefly review the measure, and others may have had more time. I think even if we were willing to accept new evidence and all agree that there probably is room for improvement and that this is of moderate to high impact, I think this measure would still run into significant difficulties as to reliability and validity. And some of that would be related to some of our prior concerns that this is actually a measure that includes a very diverse population, adolescents, adults, all ranges of CKD, transplant, dialysis, with and without cardiovascular disease. And I don't know if we want to discuss the reliability and validity, but my general sense is I don't think it would pass on those issues, even though the developers have submitted some new evidence and data. I think those two areas would still be very difficult for this measure.
This is Christine. I would agree with Lorian on that comment, as well as the reliability and validity testing. From what I can tell, it's still not done on the clinician level, and since this is a clinician level measure, it doesn't appear that they've met that criteria either.
Okay. Okay. So we can follow up with you more formally after the call, just to make sure that we are, you know, get everyone's input on this not moving forward with this measure. But we'll follow up with you after the call on that.
Hello.
Yes.
This is Dr. Veer with Active Health Management.
Oh, okay.
We didn't know if you were discussing our measure because we were not on the agenda until 4:30.
Right. Sorry, we're moving faster. So the question was just a clarification for the data that you provided on performance gap. The question, what you identified, that out of a population of 13 million, we assume that's all of the patient records that you have, that you say that 96,482 met the denominator. So that would include the children, the as I defined in your denominator, males greater than 10 and females greater than 13?
That's right. Typically, with this measure, the pediatric population that falls into this denominator is quite small, but at this time it does include the pediatric population, yes.
Okay. And we still don't have, you know, performance results at a clinician level, so...
I did explain that in my resubmission, that our performance gap is measured at a provider at the provider level across the entire patient population. If it needs to be broken down further per provider, provider specific, that would be done on a client specific request. We would make that information public knowledge without a client request. But these numbers are
right.
are based on a provider actually
taking
an action.
And we would not be asking for identification of the providers, but some idea of the distribution of the scores across the providers. But okay, steering committee, do you have any other questions for the developer from Active Health Management?
This is Lorian. I did have a question about the numerator study.
Okay, go ahead.
The numerator appears to include hyperlipidemia diagnoses that wouldn't necessarily actually represent lipid profile testing. I was just hoping to clarify if I'm interpreting that correctly, that the numerator might actually just include the diagnosis.
I'm sorry, could you point out to me which section you're reading? Is it 2A1.3?
Sure. If I go to section 2A1.3, lipid panel monitoring 15 months, one of the following is correct. It's number 5, presence of at least one, because the way I read this is one of the following is correct. So technically, if number 5 was correct, meaning the patient received a hyperlipidemia diagnosis in the past 15 months, they would be counted in the numerator, but that's not the same as having a lipid panel performed. So I just wanted to clarify, because I also noticed a lot of, I believe these are ICD-9 codes for diagnoses of hyperlipidemia as opposed to actual lipid profile testing.
Correct. So the hyperlipidemia diagnosis in the past 15 months, in that particular element in our rule, it would require that they actually had a lipid panel in order to receive that diagnosis.
I see. So somehow in your data, a diagnosis would be linked to a true lipid panel being drawn.
Exactly. And if you would like a further breakdown of that particular element, we can certainly provide the Adam.
Okay. Any other questions for the developer while we have her on the line?
This is Lori, and can I just clarify one last issue since it's come up? With the since this is such a broad population, meaning adolescents, adults, all stages of CKD, dialysis, and renal transplant, my recollection is that the results weren't going to be presented separately for these different groups. Is that correct, or was that changed in the revision? For example, would these, you know, would the results for the adolescents be mixed with the adults and the results for nephrotic syndrome be mixed with dialysis and renal transplant on lipid profile monitoring?
They would be mixed, and we were under the understanding that we were not asked to separate them at this time.
Okay, thank you. I just wanted to clarify that the revision, that was still the case. Thank you.
Right. And if the, if the guideline or recommendation and evidence are the same, it wouldn't be necessarily required to break those out separately.
That's correct. Because this is a screening, not a treatment measure, the requirements are the same.
Thank you.
And Lorian, what do you think about that? I mean, I think that was the basis of having them combined.
Well, I think the guideline is generally being followed, but I think it just gets to interpretability, I think.
Right, okay.
And so that's my concern, is if these numbers are collected, how will clinicians, pediatric nephrologists, adult nephrologists, be able to use them in a meaningful way and interpret them? And my recollection when this measure was presented at the original meeting is there was a lot of concern about the diversity of the population and interpretation.
Okay.
Right. Just to point out that a pediatric nephrologist would be measured on the pediatric patients. That is, that would be tied into our provider designation rules.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So that would obviously be their patients if it was a pediatric nephrologist.
Correct.
Okay. All right. Any other questions for the developer? And so what we'll do is follow up with the committee about your thoughts about reconsidering this measure.
Okay.
So until that would be settled, we really don't have a harmonization issue. I'll just ask if the steering committee has any other issues they want to bring up before we open up for questions or comments, and then we'll do that. So are there any other measures? And as I said, we just didn't have enough time to turn around that other letter for you to consider on this call, unfortunately. So we will follow up with you specifically about those measures separately and decide what the best process will be to move forward. Steering committee comments, questions, issues?
Kind of quiet.
Yeah.
Uncharacteristic of us.
And with that, I think we will just go ahead and to our formal NQF member and public comment period. So, operator, if you can open all of the lines, please, speaker and participant lines.
Absolutely. And the lines are open.
Okay. So are there any NQF member and or public comments or comments from the measure developers at this time? Okay. With that, I will assume that there are none.
So let me just tell you what our next steps are going to be then. As I said, we'll follow up with you specifically on whether you want to or recommend pursuing 626 any further. But in general, and we've kind of been in flux about this a bit, how to handle the full steering committee meeting, which is scheduled for October 13th. And I think at this point we've decided that we will be getting out to the full steering committee all of the summaries from the work group calls, so you can see what their deliberations were. And in some cases they re-voted on some of the measures, so you can see that information. We've decided that we'll hold off on the full steering committee voting until after that October 13th call. So on that call, we will try to organize it so that we can spend the time on measures where there still seems to be difference of opinion, but also, you know, identify those measures that seem to be, you know, clearly recommended or clearly not recommended, so that the full steering committee can raise any questions or issues before we do any voting. So, and we will focus that on the measures that were discussed on these work group calls. We may need to schedule another conference call after that if we still have any outstanding issues. And we'll probably get out a scheduler to you just to have a potential date in case we need it. But I'll stop there and see if anyone has any questions or other suggestions regarding the next step.
This is Dr. Beer again from Active Health. Just to clarify, is the October 13th meeting, will we be able to attend that meeting? Did I understand there will be an agenda sent out, or is that an internal meeting only for the MQF?
No, that'll be an open meeting, and there will be an agenda posted and call-in information.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or suggestions from the steering committee? Okay, well, we won't hold you any longer. We just had a few items that we needed to review with you, so I appreciate you getting on, and we'll follow up with an email and go from there.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you so much. Bye.